Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. The podcast is distributed on these platforms every Friday and is included in the NAHU's weekly member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. We apologize for the audio quality on this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour. We are practicing social distancing and recording in our individual homes.
Late last week, Congress passed the CARES Act, a $2 trillion stimulus package aimed at resuscitating the economy. One major portion of the CARES Act made $350 billion in paycheck protection loans available to small businesses, establishing the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP. On this week's episode of the Healthcare Happy Hour, Marcy and I are joined by Compliance Corner Committee member Annette Bechtel, who serves as Senior Vice President of Regulatory Affairs and Reform Initiatives at One Digital, to dive into how PPP works and how you and your clients can utilize it. Annette, can you go over exactly what the Paycheck Protection Program is?
Sure, Dan, thanks. The Paycheck Protection Program is part of this stimulus bill that really is designed to try to keep the American workers paid and still employed. And so it's this incentive to help small businesses through providing these 100% guaranteed covered loans, not only for small businesses, but for self-employed individuals as well. And these will be available as part of the Small Business Administration, the SBA, that they'll give money to lenders for this particular purpose.
How do members know if they or their clients will be eligible for a PPP loan?
So there is information out there, and they just did release a sample application and some information for borrowers. But basically, the eligibility is this. So businesses that were in operation on February 15th, 2020, and had 500 or fewer employees for whom they paid salaries or payroll taxes. Now, it's also available to self-employed people. It's also available to independent contractors. So in addition to small businesses, it also is available to nonprofits, certain nonprofits. So your 501c3 and 501c19, and also tribal groups as well. So it's basically in this counting of who is part of this 500 that people have been talking about it. And it's interesting because as they came out with the rules about how do I know if I'm 500 or not? There were a couple things that they did, which are not as customary for the SBA. And we're used to in the benefits area saying, okay, there's controlled groups and you have to aggregate certain businesses or certain business entities together when you're doing the counting. And so that exists as well very often with the SBA, but there's a couple of things that they relaxed here. So they did relax some of their affiliation rules in a couple of very distinct areas. And that is any business who is in the accommodation and food service industries. And so those would be businesses who have NAICS codes starting with the number 72. So those would be things like restaurants, hotels, so those types of food and accommodation services. So it's waived. You don't have to affiliate for those. So let's say you had a restaurant chain, it would be 500 or fewer for every restaurant location. So they did waive it for those particular industries. The other one that it's waived for are franchises. So if in their business coding, they have the franchise extension number, the 500 would be by franchisee, by that location.
And we do have a link to the Small Business Administration's guidance on this and the sample application that Annette mentioned on our website. So if you're having trouble finding it, you can just go to nehu.org. The coronavirus page will immediately pop up, and then you can scroll down to Small Business Administration and you'll find the links there.
Yeah, you know what I thought was interesting too, Marcy, on this application? I'm glad you mentioned it. It's a much reduced application than they normally have. It's 7 questions. So you would fill out these 7 questions and then provide your payroll receipts or proof of payroll. And that's all there is. So they've tried to make it not as restrictive as normal or as some of their other loan programs. So I think that's pretty interesting too, and pretty telling about who they're trying to help.
Right. It's definitely a different world when you're looking at not just the application process and how simplified it is and how they're trying to get these funds out, but then, like you were just discussing, with the counting mechanisms, much different than counting under the ACA. And I know it sounds silly when we're saying there's more than one way to count to 500, but there is more than one way to count to 500. And this is another way.
Yeah. When it comes down to figuring out your loan and figuring out how many people, you know, it's really one by one. Every person you employ is counted as one. Every part-timer, each person is an entity on their own.
How is the loan calculated? What metrics are being used to determine the size of a PPP loan for a particular business?
So there is a determination. First of all, there is a loan maximum, and the loan maximum is one of two things. It's either $10 million, so that is the total cap, or what they do is they'll take 2.5 times of, or 250% of whatever your average monthly payroll costs are. Now, the determination of the average monthly payroll cost would be the 12 months, the 1 year period before the date on which the loan's made. So it's basically this look back of 12 months, figuring out what your average monthly payroll costs are, and then it's 2.5 times that. So it's the lesser of either that or $10 million. Now, when you're talking about what counts in the payroll costs, so payroll costs are wages, compensation, tips, salaries, commissions, interest payment for mortgage obligations, rent, utilities, interest on any other debt obligations incurred prior, but it's also group health premiums. So group health premiums and the cost of providing group health insurance. And I think that that's interesting for our members, and also a reason to say, hey, this is really good, because as we get into figuring out how these loans work, they can actually get the money to help people get the coverage or keep the coverage that they need under their group health plan as well.
And I think that's really important, especially that last piece that you mentioned, as we're getting questions about how all of this works and questions about whether carriers will waive late premium payments and those sorts of things. If you get one of these loans, you won't have to think about it. You'll be able to get the loan to be able to cover those premiums and have the reassurance that the premiums are paid, the claims will be paid, and your employees will remain covered and not have to worry about the status of their health insurance coverage or whether the premium is going to be waived or deferred by the carrier. It can be taken care of under this loan and really have that reassurance and take away that anxiety for your employees.
Yeah, and I think that's such a critical piece. And I know all of our members are getting barraged with calls from employers trying to figure out just how to make payroll, or, you know, what do they do with benefits? Do they even keep their doors open? Do they furlough people? There's all of these things. I think what's interesting here is when they are taking these loans, they can include all the things that they need. So, you know, everything to pay their people, and also any payment, like for people who are on vacation, you know, who are taking some sort of medical leave, all of that's included in there. And also, it's been interesting because I've had a few discussions with different folks, you know, payment of retirement benefits could be in there as well. But in the way that it's written, when it talks about it, it says anything for group health care benefits, including insurance premiums. There are some out there who are interpreting and saying, well, is that any insurance premium? So that's something coming forward, I'm sure we'll see clarification on. But the one thing I wanted to mention in here is with regard to these salaries or compensation, when they're figuring out and adding up all of these things that will count as payroll costs, they cannot include any compensation or wages that exceed $100,000 for any one person. So if they have somebody on their payroll that's receiving $250,000, they can't count more than $100,000 for that particular person. So there's some capping in there on an individual basis as well.
What exactly can PPP loans be used to cover?
They can be used to cover payroll costs, the continuation of care including paid sick leave or family leave. However, I do want to make a caveat there. They can't use it if they're already getting reimbursement under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. So if they're getting the monies back from the federal government to cover the emergency paid sick leave and the expanded FMLA that's under that particular law, they can't use it here too. So there's no double dipping. But for any other types of paid or sick leave, let's say somebody is out because they had surgery, nothing related to COVID, right? Then they can use it for that. Insurance premiums, salaries. So this is where people are saying, insurance premiums, any insurance premiums? So could it be used for, you know, property, et cetera? So there's a little bit of confusion about that. Interest on any other debt obligations for debts that were incurred prior to February 15th of this year, rent, utilities, those types of things. So basically operational type things, as well as maintaining your workforce. And that's really what it was meant to do.
How does forgiveness on a PPP loan work?
So this is the beauty of this whole thing. So, and I know for small businesses, they, or any business, you know, the biggest thing on your mind is, if I'm going to take out a loan, I have to repay it. And how am I going to do that if I don't have a business or it's not thriving like it was? So the beauty of this particular program is that it can be 100% forgivable. In other words, they don't have to pay it back. And there are certain caps to that. So there are two different calculations. So basically, we talked about the calculation of how much do I get. Then there's a separate calculation and actually a separate application that would happen afterward. So you apply for the loan, and then 8 weeks later or so, you apply for the forgiveness part. And so what the loan forgiveness provision allows is it's this waiver of this payback of an amount that's going to be equal to the payroll costs, payment of interest on any mortgage obligations, rent, and utilities, as long as those mortgage rent utilities were in place before February 15th, during the 8 week period that starts on the date that you begin your loan. So again, you're going to calculate how much of my loan is forgivable. It's whatever payroll costs, interest on mortgage obligations you have, rent and utilities during the 8 weeks that begins on the date your loan starts. So that amount that you spend is what you get back. Now, there is a reduction that could happen there. And that reduction is based on the fact that if you end up either changing salary significantly, like reducing salary significantly, or reducing your workforce significantly between February 15th of 2020 and June 30th of 2020, then the percentage by which your workforce changes, there's a specific calculation for that, could cause the loan forgiveness part to be less. So let's say you have your 8 weeks, here's all the payroll I spent, here's what I spent in rent and utilities, and here's how much I want for my loan. Let's say it's $1 million that I need. If I have 280 people, when I look at my average full-time equivalent employees, so when we're thinking about loan forgiveness, now we got to count people differently. So when we were thinking about, do I have 500 or more, we're counting heads. But when I'm thinking about loan forgiveness, they specifically put in that we have to figure out the average number of full-time equivalents. Now, they didn't define for us what full-time equivalents means here. And the average number of full-time equivalent employees I have, let's say for this period of February 15th to June 30th, let's say it's 280 people. I have to compare that to what did it look like last year during 2019, February to June? What was my average full-time equivalence then? Let's say I had 350 then, and I only have 280 now. That means I only have 80% of my workforce compared to last year. Well, what happens then is my $1 million then gets multiplied by 80%, and that's my loan that's forgivable. So this change in workforce will have a reduction element to the amount of the forgiveness. Salaries too, a reduction in salaries, in total salaries or wages for an employee during the cover period, that's in excess of 25% of their total salary or wages, could also have a reducing factor. Now, there's one caveat to that, though. If for some reason I rehire a bunch of people, so as long as I rehire, if I've reduced my employees during the period of February 15th and ending April 25th, now we have a new date. But if I restore people by June 30th or restore those positions, then I don't have to count any of those negatively in this calculation.
And so it sounds like when we talked about applying for the loan and then now how the loan works on the other end with the forgiveness of the loan, it definitely sounds like it's much easier at the start to apply, fill out those 7 questions, easily count one person as one person, But then on the back end, folks need to be aware that there are much more intricate calculations and formulas put into place when they're calculating their forgiveness. So something that needs to be kind of present of mind when they're deciding whether they want to apply for one of these loans. Don't be fooled by how easy it might seem at the beginning. There's a lot of work at the end when you go through to determine your forgiveness. So just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. So you need to be thoughtful about how much are you asking to borrow. If you don't want to have a ton to pay back, think about you'll need to kind of consider all of these factors. How does my workforce look today compared to then? What am I using the monies for in this 8-week period? Can I restore people back? So it's good, Marcy, you're right, to be thoughtful about what am I borrowing. But I will say this, that whatever balance is left over, so you have this $1 million, let's say even, you know, 700 is forgivable. That's $700,000 you don't have to pay back. And on that balance, the interest rate is 0.5%. So nobody's going to have that. And it's over a 2-year period. So you would have this 2-year period for payback. As members for our clients, we should be telling people, look, once you figure out who your lender is, because that's the government made this money available to FDIC lenders. So it would be your banks, your credit unions, whoever your lender is, sit down with them and ask them good questions and be thoughtful about what you're borrowing. So
are there any gray areas around PPPs? Any areas that require further regulatory guidance in the near future?
Oh, if we don't know them all today, we'll find them as this goes on, right? Like in every other piece that we have. But I would say for, you know, one of the things that we just talked about was this full-time equivalent issue. So when we're talking about county employees for the forgiveness part, they revert to this full-time equivalent. And of course, for us, present of mind, we think automatically that means the ACA calculation of full-time equivalent, but doesn't. The ACA was based on health insurance and health insurance rules where they said 30 hours or more is full-time. This is not based on that. If this is based on employment, then 40 hours is full-time according to the FLSA, right? So is that how we count? Is that what they meant? No clue. So I think we're supposed to see some guidance and the rules are not out yet. I'm hearing maybe this week we might get some of the regulatory guidance on this.
Yes, hopefully within the week.
Yeah, so that might answer that question. That's a big one. I think there'll be more around this counting at the beginning too and who this 500 is, I hope. There's a lot of questions I've been getting about companies that are maybe not in the U.S. or they're owned by foreign entities, but they have operations in the U.S. and the SBA talks about having a significant workforce in the U.S., what does that mean? So I hope that there's some things around that, even who's eligible for these loans. I think those types of things would be really, really helpful in figuring out, am I eligible? Then how much comes back to me? So,
and similar to what we at NEHU do with many other things, and especially here with the different guidance and laws that have been rapidly coming out on COVID-19 related issues, we have been compiling questions about things that we think need more guidance or regulations from what they've already released. So as folks go through the loan process and you see some of these things poking out that you think need to be addressed through some type of guidance or clarification from the agencies or from the SBA, please let us know. And we are happy to reach out to the administration and see if we can get some of that guidance that can help folks across the board. So not just for your clients, but other clients, that other employers that are experiencing the same difficulties with complying.
And the other thing I think I would say there as well, and one clarification, is that the loans are going to be staggered. And I think they're doing that because I think the loans are going to go very, very quickly. Small businesses and sole proprietors are allowed to apply starting on Friday the 3rd, but not until Friday the 10th are independent contractors and self-employed individuals able to apply. And then other issues, specific guidance on kind of the loan forgiveness stuff, I don't think it'll be in this first batch. I think that's going to come probably later in the month. So I think we'll see a couple of different pieces to the regulatory guidance come out.
It is now time for the NEHU Healthcare Happy Hours Host of the Week. Annette, who are we toasting to this week?
I think this week we have to toast to our members, the people who are on the front lines helping those with and without coverage, basically to understand their benefits, the new laws, and help them keep their businesses thriving and take care of their employees in these uncertain times.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit NAHU.org.